Gander, the trail boss, was a worried man. They were 3 mornings out from Semphis, making good time, and were climbing now towards the rocky pass through the mountains known as the Paps of Scylla. There were 8 of them. Gander often wondered who Scylla had been, and whether he would have liked her. A party of gnolls had crept up on them during the night. The nasty creatures, a variety of stone goblin, had slit the throat of a guard and must have been poised to slaughter the entire party. Only no one quite knew what had happened next. The screams had woken them up, and by the time people had puffed up the fires and Treacle the Wizard had cast a blue radiance over the campsite, the surviving gnolls were distant, spidery shadows running as if the legions of hell were after them. Judging by what had happened to their colleagues, they were probably right. Bits of gnolls hung from the nearby rocks, giving them a sort of jolly, festive air. Gander wasn't particularly sorry about that. Gnolls liked to capture travellers and practice hospitality of the red-hot knife and bludgeon kind, but he was nervous of being in the same area as something that went through a dozen wiry and wickedly armed gnolls like a spoon through a lightly boiled egg but left no tracks. In fact, the ground was swept clean. It had been a very long night, and the morning didn't seem to be an improvement. The only person more than half awake was Esk, who had slept through the whole thing under one of the wagons and had complained only of odd dreams. Still, it was a relief to get away from that macabre sight. Gander considered that gnolls didn't look any better inside than out. He hated their guts. Esk sat on Treacle's wagon talking to Simon, who was steering inexpertly while the wizard caught up with some sleep behind them. Simon did everything inexpertly. He was really good at it. He was one of those tall lads apparently made out of knees, thumbs and elbows. Watching him walk was a strain. You kept waiting for the strings to snap, and when he talked, the spasm of agony on his face if he spotted an S or W looming ahead in the sentence made people instinctively say them for him. It was worth it for the grateful look which spread across his acneed face like sunrise on the moon. At the moment, his eyes were streaming with hay fever.
"Did you want to be a wizard when you were a little boy?"
Simon shook his head.
"I just
wanted
to find out how things
worked.
Yes, then someone in my village told the university and Master Treacle was sent to bring me. I shall be a
wizard
one day.
Master Treacle says I have an exceptional grasp of theory. Simon's damp eyes misted over, and an expression almost of bliss drifted across his ravaged face.
He tells me they've got thousands of books in the library at Unseen University, he said in the voice of a man in love. More books than anyone could read in a lifetime.
I'm not sure I like books,
said Esk, conversationally.
How can paper know things?
My granny says books are only good if the paper is thin.
No, that's not right, said Simon urgently.
Books are full of...
He gulped air and gave her a pleading look.
Words?
Said Esk, after a moment's thought.
Yes, and they can change things.
What?
I must find. I know it's there, somewhere in all the old books. They say there's no new spells, but I know that it's there somewhere, hiding the
words.
Yes, that's no
wizard,
said Esk, her face a frown of concentration. Yes, has ever found.
His eyes closed, and he smiled a beatific smile and added, "The words that will change the world."
"What?
Eh?"
said Simon, opening his eyes in time to stop the oxen wandering off the track.
"You said all those wubble-yous."
"I did."
"I heard you. Try again."
Simon took a deep breath.
"The
he said.
"The
he continued.
"It's no good, it's gone," he said. "It happens sometimes if I don't think about it.
Master Treacle says I'm allergic to something."
"Allergic to W's?"
No, silly, said Esk generously. There's something in the air. Pollen, maybe, or grass dust. Master Tweedle has tried to find the cause of it, but no magic seems to help it.
They were passing through a narrow pass of orange rock. Simon looked at it disconsolately.
My granny taught me some hay fever cures, Esk said. We could try those.
Simon shook his head. It looked touch and go whether it would fall off. Tried everything, he said. Fine magician I'd make, eh? Can't even utter the name.
I could see where that would be a problem, said Esk. She watched the scenery for a while, marshalling a train of thought.
Is it possible for a woman to be, you know, a wizard?
She said eventually. Simon stared at her. She gave him a defiant look. His throat strained. He was trying to find a sentence that didn't start with a W. In the end, he was forced to make concessions. A curious idea, he said. He thought some more and started to laugh until Esk's expression warned him. Rather funny, really, he added. But the laughter in his face faded and was replaced by a puzzled look. Never really thought about it before.
Well, can they?
You could have shaved with Esk's voice. Of course they can't. It is self-evident, child. Simon, return to your studies.
Tweedle pushed aside the curtain that led into the back of the wagon and climbed out onto the seat board. The look of mild panic took up its familiar place on Simon's face. He gave Esk a pleading glance as Tweedle took the reins from his hands, but she ignored him.
Why not? What's so self-evident?
Tweedle turned and looked down at her. He hadn't really paid much attention before. She was simply just another figure around the campfires. He was the Vice-Chancellor of Unseen University and quite used to seeing vague, scurrying figures getting on with essential but unimportant jobs, like serving his meals and dusting his rooms. He was stupid, yes, in the particular way that very clever people can be stupid, and maybe he had all the tact of an avalanche and was as self-centred as a tornado, but it would never have occurred to him that children were important enough to be unkind to. From long white hair to curly boots, Tweedle was a wizard's wizard. He had the appropriate long bushy eyebrows, spangled robe and patriarchal beard that was only slightly spoiled by the yellow nicotine stains. Wizards are celibate, but nevertheless enjoy a good cigar.
It will all become clear to you when you grow up, he said. It's an amusing idea, of course, a nice play on words, a female wizard. You might as well invent a male witch.
Warlocks, said Esk.
Pardon me?
My granny says men can't be witches, said Esk. She says if men tried to be witches, they'd be wizards.
She sounds a very wise woman, said Tweedle.
She says women should stick to what they're good at, Esk went on.
Very sensible of her.
She says if women were as good as men, they'd be a lot better.
Tweedle laughed.
She's a witch, said Esk, and added in her mind, There, what do you think of that, Mr. So-called clever wizard?
My dear good young lady, am I supposed to be shocked? I happen to have a great respect for witches.
Esk frowned. He wasn't supposed to say that.
You have?
Yes, indeed. I happen to believe that witchcraft is a fine career for a woman. A very noble calling.
You do? I mean, it is.
Oh, yes. Very useful in rural districts for people who are having babies and so forth. However, witches are not wizards. Witchcraft is nature's way of allowing women access to the magical fluxes. But you must remember, it is not high magic.
I see. Not high magic, said Esk grimly.
Oh, no. Witchcraft is very suitable for helping people through life, of course, but...
I expect women aren't really sensible enough to be wizards, said Esk. I expect that's it, really.
"I have nothing but the highest respect for women," said Treacle, who hadn't noticed the fresh edge to Esk's tone. "They are without parallel when...
"For having babies and so forth?"
"There is that, yes," the wizard conceded generously. "But they can be a little unsettling at times, a little too excitable. High magic requires great clarity of thought, you see, and women's talents do not lie in that direction. Their brains tend to overheat. I'm sorry to say there is only one door into wizardry, and that is the main gate at Unseen University, and no woman has ever passed through it."
"Tell me," said Esk, "what good is high magic exactly?"
Treacle smiled at her. "High magic, my child," he said, "can give us everything we want."
"Oh.
So put all this wizard nonsense out of your head, all right?" Treacle gave her a benevolent smile. "What is your name, child?"
"Escarina."
"And why do you go to Ankh, my dear?"
"I thought I might seek my fortune," muttered Esk. "But I think perhaps girls don't have fortunes to seek. Are you sure wizards give people what they want?"
"Of course. That is what high magic is for."
"I see."
The whole caravan was travelling only a little faster than walking pace. Esk jumped down, pulled a staff from its temporary hiding place among the bags and pails on the side of the wagon, and ran back along the line of carts and animals. Through her tears, she caught a glimpse of Simon peering from the back of the wagon, an open book in his hands. He gave her a puzzled smile and started to say something, but she ran on and veered off the track. Scrubby windbrushes scratched her legs as she scrambled up a clay bank, and then she was running free across a barren plateau, hemmed in by the orange cliffs. She didn't stop until she was good and lost, but the anger still burned brightly. She had been angry before, but never like this. Normally, anger was like the red flame you got when the forge was first lit, all glow and sparks. But this anger was different. It had the bellows behind it, and had narrowed to the tiny blue-white flame that cuts iron. It made her body tingle. She had to do something about it, or burst. Why was it that when she heard Granny ramble on about witchcraft, she longed for the cutting magic of wizardry, but whenever she heard Treacle speak in his high-pitched voice, she would fight to the death for witchcraft? She'd be both, or none at all. And the more they intended to stop her, the more she wanted it. She'd be a witch and a wizard too, and she would show them.
Esk sat down under a low-spreading juniper bush at the foot of a steep, sheer cliff, her mind seething with plans and anger. She could sense doors being slammed before she had barely begun to open them. Treacle was right. They wouldn't let her inside the university. Having a staff wasn't enough to be a wizard. There had to be training too, and no one was going to train her.
The midday sun beat down off the cliff, and the air around Esk began to smell of bees and gin. She lay back, looking at the near-purple dome of the sky through the leaves, and eventually she fell asleep. One side effect of using magic is that one tends to have realistic and disturbing dreams. There is a reason for this, but even thinking about it is enough to give a wizard nightmares. The fact is that the minds of wizards can give thoughts a shape. Witches normally work with what actually exists in the world, but a wizard can, if he's good enough, put flesh on his imagination. This wouldn't cause any trouble if it wasn't for the fact that the little circle of candlelight, loosely called the universe of time and space, is adrift in something much more unpleasant and unpredictable. Strange things circle and grunt outside the flimsy stockades of normality. There are weird hootings and howlings in the deep crevices at the edge of time. There are things so horrible that even the dark is afraid of them. Most people don't know this, and this is just as well, because the world could not really operate if everyone stayed in bed with the blankets over their head,
which is what would happen if people knew what horrors lay a shadow's width away. The problem is people interested in magic and mysticism spend a lot of time loitering on the very edge of the light, as it were, which gets them noticed by the creatures from the dungeon dimensions, who then try to use them in their indefatigable efforts to break into this particular reality. Most people can resist this, but the relentless probing by the things is never stronger than when the subject is asleep. Bel Shamhoroth, Cahooligan, the Insider, the hideous old dark gods of the Necrotelecomnicon, the book known to certain mad adepts by its true name of Liber Paginarum Fulvarum, are always ready to steal into a slumbering mind. The nightmares are often colourful and always unpleasant. Esk had got used to them ever since that first dream after her first borrowing, and familiarity had almost replaced terror. When she found herself sitting on a glittering dusty plain under unexplained stars, she knew it was time for another one.
"Drat," she said. "All right, come on then. Bring on the monsters. I just hope it isn't the one with his winkle on his face."
But this time it seemed that the nightmare had changed. Esk looked around and saw, rearing up behind her, a tall black castle. Its turrets disappeared among the stars. Lights and fireworks and interesting music cascaded from its upper battlements. The huge double doors stood invitingly open. There seemed to be quite an amusing party going on in there. She stood up, brushed the silver sand off her dress, and set off for the gates. She had almost reached them when they slammed. They didn't appear to move. It was simply that in one instant they were lounging ajar, and the next they were tight shut with a clang that shook the horizons. Esk reached out and touched them. They were black, and so cold that ice was beginning to form on them. There was a movement behind her. She turned around and saw the staff, without its broomstick disguise, standing upright in the sand. Little worms of light crept around its polished wood and crept around the carvings no one could ever quite identify. She picked it up and smashed it against the doors. There was a shower of octarine sparks, but the black metal was unscathed. Esk's eyes narrowed. She held the staff at arm's length and concentrated until a thin line of fire leapt from the wood and burst against the gate. The ice flashed into steam, but the darkness, she was sure now that it wasn't metal, absorbed the power without so much as glowing. She doubled the energy, letting the staff put all its stored magic into a beam that was now so bright that she had to shut her eyes and could still see it as a brilliant line in her mind. Then it winked out. After a few seconds, Esk ran forward and touched the doors gingerly. Coldness nearly froze her fingers off. And from the battlements above, she could hear the sound of sniggering. Laughter wouldn't have been so bad, especially an impressive, demonic laugh with lots of echo, but this was just sniggering. It went on for a long time. It was one of the most unpleasant sounds Esk had ever heard.